Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus. As we pull out the bus in unfortunate circumstances with seven or eight inches of snow, it's a mess out there, and the bus is a mess, covered in mud, covered in snow. We're in a horrible state. It almost looks like a tank, a full-fledged. We should change the name of the cast to the Big Red Tank. What do you think, Doug?
That's a good thing. Let's hope so. Let's hope it's just all awesome the rest of the way.
Exactly. So as we drive it out, a lot of topics to talk about. I'm up and down on a few of them, unfortunately. Let's start out with last night's game. I had a daddy-daughter dance that I was unable to watch or witness the debauchery of last night's game against the Wizards. What's your opinion on that game? I know you got a chance to watch it this morning. I did see the highlight of the Portis incident. Let's just get a quick 411 on that game and what you took from it.
I think there was much. It was like one of the worst games to watch. There's been a lot of worst games to watch since Dunn has been out because the offense looks so terrible. But with Levine out as well, just from back-to-back protocol for his ACL recovery, which maybe at this point is a little overly cautious, but I'm happy that he was not in the game and wasn't firing up shots, getting the Bulls another win. So I was okay with that. But it was just really a sluggish game offensively. You did get to see Lowry get a lot of shots up, and it kind of backs up some of what I've said, and it's only a one-game sample size, is, you know, he's not a guy so far, if you just give him the ball, he's going to go get you a ton of points. Like, I mean, I think he really needs someone to help get him in the flow of the offense at this stage of his development. And without Dunn or Levine or any real kind of point guard or anyone who's going to move the ball, you know, he really struggled and missed a lot of shots and was what it was. And the most interesting thing, like you mentioned, was that Portis foul. They called it a flagrant two, and I just thought that was the worst flagrant two foul I've seen in a while. I hate it when they look at the results and they call the foul based on the results rather than based on the action. Portis goes up. He doesn't hit him in the head. He doesn't hit him in the upper body. He hits the guy's arm, and he cleanly goes through the ball. I shouldn't say cleanly since he's an arm, but clearly goes straight through the ball, like full hand on the ball. And just, you know, they make arm-to-arm contact, and it was just unfortunate, the angle and everything else. And so now it's a flagrant two. I mean, you can't just call flagrant twos based on the results, in my opinion. You can call a flagrant one, I think, and say, hey, part of this is results and part of it is intention. So this is a flagrant one based on the results, even if your intention wasn't bad. But I don't think you can give a guy a flagrant two if there's clearly no intention and he clearly doesn't hit the guy in the head or anything else.
I concur 100% on the Portis. I thought that was if you look at the play, you can almost argue he didn't foul. It was just an unfortunate situation where his momentum was going so hard towards the basket I can't remember who it was that he fouled on the Wizards.
Great.
Yes, and he was just, you know, running so hard towards the basket, one up strong, Portis hits the ball, and it's, you know, just a horrible looking play, but I agree 100%. And I'm hoping that, you know, some sanity arrives at the NBA offices and they change that and they bring it down to, you know, flagrant one. Because it was completely undeserved. I agree 100% there. I will argue with you on Markkanen. So Markkanen, obviously, last night, playing without Levine, playing without Dunn, you know, the two other best players on this team, he's 5-19 shooting, and he's 1-8 from three. So any night where he's going to be 1-8 from three and take eight shots and miss like that, it's going to look bad. He still put up a double-double with 12 and 10 in 33 minutes. And
well, come on. If you throw up 19 shots, you better get it.
Amen. I agree. But I don't want to say, I believe, I think it's ridiculous to at this point say, see, this is what I mean when you give him a high volume of shots. If he would have gone 4-for-8 from three, the night would have been a much better, right? But he just wasn't hitting his three. And that's my whole point about Markkanen is, like, I think that's the one skill that he's disappointed me on this year. I don't think he shot it as well as he can. And I think every player that you look at in the NBA at a young age does not shoot the three as well as they do as they progress. There's very few examples of great players that shot the three better as a rookie than they did 3, 4, 5 years in. I can't even think of one. And you go through all the great players. So that's the one area that he has to improve.
Why are you disappointed? If you know rookies don't shoot the three well, why are you so disappointed? Just your expectation. He's going to struggle with this.
Yeah, as a rookie. Good point. Yeah, good point. But I did expect him to shoot a little bit better. Like, that's his greatest strength. I've been pleasantly surprised in every other aspect of his game. Defensively, rebounding, passing, driving, you know, aggressiveness. He's got everything else great, and that's the only other aspect of his game where I was like, eh. You know, I was hoping he'd be at 39, 40% from three. You know, that said, it's like, I brought this point up on a previous show I did. The Bulls, their big three, LaVine, Dunn, and Markkanen, have been together a total of three games all year. So, and they're 2-1 in those games. They beat Detroit, Miami, and they lost to Golden State when Dunn, you know, fell on his face. And at that point, they were making a run. I thought they played very well that game up to that point. So, that's the only thing about this season. It's been a success in some ways, but those three guys really need to get more time together. That's the core going forward. And to have only three games, I hope we kind of rectify that before the year's out. I know it's going to be a tough balance between sitting guys and tanking. But what do you think about that, with that knowledge? Three games together for the big three.
I think for sure that those guys are going to cause the Bulls to win games. I mean, I think that's the one thing I look at the Bulls rest of the year. And even though they've been through this 1-7 stretch without Dunn, when Dunn comes back, I just don't see them competing with the other teams who are at the bottom. You know, and I think they're going to play much better. Agreed. The only thing that gives me a little bit of hesitation there is maybe if, you know, you've got like a little bit of that chemistry, you're trying to figure out, are they able to share the ball, find the right pick and rolls. You know, who's going to take the ball? LaVine likes the ball in his hands a lot. I mean, he went into total hero ball mode against the Timberwolves, which we can talk about in a few minutes. But I do think it's one of those deals where they're going to get some wins. I think the Bulls could maybe climb back up to like 10th in the draft area if they're not aggressive about removing some of the other players from the game who are decent contributors, like, you know, bringing Robin Lopez out of games and giving Felicio a lot more minutes. You know, maybe limiting the minutes of those guys who are really good to like 30. You know, don't play Don Levine and Markkanen over 30 minutes, and make sure you get plenty of Paul Zipser in there. You know, stuff like that. You're gonna have to do things like that if you want to balance out losing with getting these guys time together. Make sure their minutes are limited to a point, and they play all of them together so they get that to practice. But you still have enough lousy minutes in there by other players to ensure the loss.
Yeah, I agree 100%, and if you look at the game against Minnesota, the Bulls do not win that game if Robin Lopez doesn't play, you know, a significant amount of minutes, and that's something they got to do. You have to go the Suns-Lakers route and sit Lopez down, explain to him the situation, take Holiday in the office, explain to him the situation, and say, we got to minimize your time. I'm sorry, you're going to play about 15 to 20 minutes for the rest of the season. We're going to stick Felicio out there for major minutes, and we're going to suck. That's the game plan. If Felicio gets a significant amount of minutes and they start playing, you know, and they're sitting Lopez and some of these starters, even like Nwaba, I think you have to kind of limit his minutes too and play guys like Paul Zipser. Felicio and Paul Zipser have to play more. Mission accomplished. If those guys play significant minutes, between 25 and 30 minutes a game, you're going to lose games. But I do agree with you. Like, I am concerned. You can see it. As soon as Dunn comes back, he's so far superior defensively on that end that a lot of these games, even like a game like last night I'd throw out after reading the stat line, I think he would have had a major impact on that game. And I think he would have had a major impact in the Minnesota game too. And it would have been maybe even more of a bigger win for the Bulls. But I agree 100%. Why don't we get it transition now into that topic as we look at the Timberwolves game? I'd like to get your opinion on LaVine's performance. He was absolutely fantastic in the fourth quarter. But I do have some concerns on his shot selection and his, you know, monopolizing the ball. I thought there were several times in that game where he made shots that were contested, double teams, where Markkanen was wide open. And Markkanen had it going, I thought, pretty well in the third quarter. So I'd like to transition a little bit. Give your opinion of that game, first of all, and also this, I think, potential issue of who's the guy down the stretch and how they're going to divvy up passing that ball, moving that ball around a little bit as games are decided in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I think that gets more interesting when Dunn is back, because Dunn has really been the guy who had kind of controlled the offense in those critical moments before, and now LaVine being back, LaVine is kind of that guy who's controlling the ball in the critical moments. I don't think Lowry is a guy who can really control the ball in critical moments. I just don't think he's at that point in his development yet. And I do agree with what you said earlier. He has impressed me relative to where I thought he would be when we drafted him in every way except his shooting. So when I say some of these things, it's not that I feel he's a bad prospect or a bad guy. This guy needs to develop more. I don't think he's ready to be that end of game type of option yet. So it's between Levine and Dunn to me who's going to get the ball at the end there. And, you know, we'll see how those two guys try to figure out how to work things out. In terms of the Timberwolves game overall, I thought, you know, Levine's shot selection was a little dicey at times. There was one play where he was driving and he had Lowry, like, wide open, and he took and missed this shot. It was like maybe a 17-foot jumper, step-back jumper. He had another shot that he hit. I think it was maybe a three, so it worked out well. But Lauri Markkanen had Jeff Teague in the post and was, like, 4 feet from the basket. You kind of feel like the right play there is to throw the ball into Lowry and let him work Teague in the post. So he definitely had complete blinders on, went total hero ball, and the Bulls won, and he hit shots, and so it's hard to really argue with the result, but he's definitely throwing up a whole ton of looks. I think it was Mark from Bulls HQ who posted something on his Twitter timeline, if you didn't see it, which was effectively Zach LaVine has the highest usage rate ever in Bulls history, except for Michael Jordan. So he's a good player, but like... Yeah. It's not that Michael Jordan, and maybe the Bulls need to rein him in at some point and say, look, we know you're trying to get your shots up. You know, we know you're fighting for a contract, but come on, man. You got to play some team ball here, too.
Yeah, and my hope is, you know, he's 22. With I think that selfishness does, you can sit a guy down, spend time with him in the film room, and affect that in a positive fashion. I think if you spend enough time with them in the film room, they'll realize, all right, I see what I'm doing here. I need to improve on that. So I have a lot of hope there. The good, I don't want to be all bad Levine because it shouldn't be. Athletically, he looked absolutely incredible. I was blown away with how good. This kid was the best athlete on the floor. I didn't see any signs. You know, I felt this way about Rose. When Rose came back, he never really ever approached what he was before. And people are doubting that. All you need to do is Google three dunks in the Miami series in 2011. You can see how incredible and jaw-dropping an athlete Derek was. He never approached it again. What I saw in Q4 from Levine, I didn't see anything that would ever signal to me that he had any ACL surgery. He was, jaw-dropping as far as athleticism, attacking the rim, 11 free throw attempts. He just took over in Q4. Do you concur?
Yes, completely. And the elevation he has on his jumper is insane.
Agreed.
He's like jumping like 36 inches to shoot a jumper. I mean, it's crazy. He's just great elevation, great aggressiveness. I'm very excited, actually, about Levine's potential after watching him, you know, the past couple weeks. He had a stretch where he really struggled with shooting. But I think the last few games, he's really started to get his groove on and find his shots. And just very aggressive. I like the style he's playing. He's looking to generate more free throws. And I've thrown out different comparisons. I've thrown out Kevin Martin before. And now I'm going to throw out another one, a positive one. I'm going to throw out James Harden. Mm. And I say that not because he's necessarily the same fit in a lot of ways, but Harden was another guy who, at one point, didn't score so much with a group of other scorers, got traded to a team, became the primary option, just started scoring a whole ton of points, kind of a ball hog, a very heavy isolation player, and then was known as just an atrocious defender. And over time, he's like improved a lot of those things. And I'm just wondering if Zach LaVine is not the same physical package, actually I think much more athletic than James Harden is, probably nowhere near as smooth in terms of some of the other skills just yet, but that's now my upside comparison, that you could see maybe a progression kind of like that.
I agree 100%. And I do agree, probably the aspect of his game I'm most excited about, and you kind of touched on it a bit, is his shooting. I think at 22, where he's shooting right now, his form is fantastic, his mechanics are fantastic. He gets so much height, as you pointed out, in his jump shot, that I think he can improve where he's going to be a 40% three-point shooter. And when you have a weapon like that on one side and Markkanen on the other, and Dunn owns the ball in the middle and is able to make decisions to distribute it to one of those two options, you have a potentially lethal offensive team. in a few years. Obviously, it's not there yet. But it is. I don't see how anyone could not be excited after watching that game. It was fantastic to see him take it to Jimmy Butler. And Jimmy Butler did not play well in Q4. He was awesome before that. He was 2-10 from the field in Q4. And, you know, he did get to the line a lot, which obviously he always does very well. I'd like your thoughts a little bit on those two players, though. You know, seeing Jimmy come back and Taj come back. I thought the Bulls handled that great with the video tribute. It was just, you know, obviously a lot of feelings are come up when you think of those players. I'd like to get your thoughts when I say Jimmy Butler. What images or what comes to mind immediately? And also the same with Taj.
I think for me, Taj Gibson is easier of those two things. That iconic dunk he had against the Miami Heat in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's that put back offensive rebound, and it seemed like his arm stretched like 8 feet back, like almost like he caught the ball at the free throw line, and then just like dunked it. You know, exaggerating clearly, but it was just this like incredible athletic play, and it put the Bulls up by like 20 points like near the end of the game. And you already knew before this play they're gonna win, but like after that play, it just you felt like not only did the Bulls like win, they just crushed Miami. Like, just thrashed them. And you, like, went into that next day being like, yes, the Bulls are going to win this title. Like, they are going to win this thing. Like, you just had that feeling, like, this could really happen. And, of course, then we lost four straight and we're never close again. But it was just this amazing, amazing moment. And Taj has had so many of those, like, huge put-back dunks. So I think that's what I'll always remember him. And then just probably, honestly, like, his smile is the other thing. Like, Taj always had that, like, smile when he was like looking at the ref when a foul call happened, and like that kind of, you know, tilt of his head, like really, you know, just kind of gave you like almost like the sarcastic look, like
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
He's just such a good guy. Like every time I interviewed him, he was like super nice, like very friendly, professional. Like just strikes me as one of those guys no one would ever say anything bad about ever. I mean, probably like a future coach at some point in the league, I think. Just nothing but positive feelings about Taj, like forever. Jimmy Butler, maybe not quite as much. I think he was a super hard worker. I think he also had like a little bit of Jordan in him where he was kind of a dick to people who maybe weren't working as hard. A little bit of arrogance as his game developed. But I think that's okay. You know, he's a great player. And, you know, I like the fact that he wanted to hold guys accountable. I like the fact in some ways that, you know, when he calls out his head coach, he's calling him out because he's not working the team hard enough. You know, like he's
yeah.
not... You know, like those are, you never want a guy to call someone out, but like, it's like the reason behind that is kind of okay to me. Like, he's not calling him out for not getting his number called enough or for not getting minutes or, you know, he's calling him out because he's not working the team hard enough and he wants everyone to play harder. Like, yeah, I kind of get that. Probably the moment for me for Jimmy Butler that I'll always remember most is just that fight he got into with Nene, and they had like the headbutt in the Washington game, and I think that was probably the thing that stands out. And then just like all the times he just sort of faces up on some guy and just, you know, just hits that like mid-range jumper like right in their face. And I always thought like this is a shot that's like a terrible shot in today's NBA. And it's like Jimmy Butler's like specialty. It's his bread and butter. And he still has become a great player. He's sort of like a very unorthodox player in today's standards. You know, like the way he scores is very contrary to the direction the league is going overall. And I think that also makes him somewhat unique and kind of a cool guy. But I'm glad we traded him and that we got the guys back we did. I think we're actually going to be much better off. And honestly, it's just taking a moment because we're at this game. I think the Timberwolves are really going to regret this trade in about 2 years when Jimmy Butler goes somewhere else.
I agree 100%. Let me first start with Taj Gibson, what I think about Taj Gibson. I remember the night he was drafted, we were together, and for anyone who's listening who hasn't been to any one of Doug's draft parties, it's a must attend, and you're always pretty, I don't think you've ever turned anyone down who wanted to go, so I encourage everyone who listens to come next year, because it's always a fun event. You know, probably filled with the smartest, you know, 10 or 20 Bulls fans in the universe are always attending this event. I include you, myself, and the ball guys in this, and several other guys. And I'll never forget that draft because the Bulls had two picks. They took James Johnson first, but a player by the name of Dwan Blair out of the University of Pittsburgh was projected to go in the lottery, and he had fallen at that point due to some questions about his knees. And so with the second pick, I think the entire room was like, Dwan Blair. You know, I mean, it was like everybody was cheering for Dwan Blair to pick Taj Gibson, and it was like an audible groan. Who the heck is Taj Gibson? Everybody was upset. Am I right, Doug? Is this exactly how it went?
Right. We nicknamed him Taj, not Dwan Blair Gibson, for like 6 months.
And again, this is part of the reason I defend John Paxson, because in the front office to some degree, because they were right. We were all wrong. Taj Gibson was awesome from day one. People also forget. I think there's kind of like a revisionist history around Taj that he was kind of made by, you know, he was made by Tibbs. And no, he was a rookie under Vinny Del Negro, who knows absolutely nothing. And he was still first-team all-rookie. And immediately, he was awesome defensively. And he's such a good defensive player. That was the thing that always sticks with me. You know, some iconic blocks, rebounds. Just a great athlete. And you're right. What a great guy. You know, always friendly. Always with a smile. Good team guy. He never caused a problem. But when you think of the plays, what amazes me is the dunk on Wade and that putback that you're talking about. I think both of those were in the same game. One was in the first half, and the other one's in the second half. I had forgotten about the putback one-handed dunk. I think that was in the same game, Game 1 of the 2011 yep. Eastern Conference Finals, which just blows my mind that he could come up with two dunks like that. And, you know, I had gone back on YouTube and found some of his dunks. He's just such a great, underrated player. You know, never an all-star, but will always go down in my heart as one of my favorite Bulls. And I'm just so glad that the reaction that the crowd had, and you saw it, how much he appreciated it. He hit his heart, and, you know, it was, I just love Taj Gibson. I agree with you about Jimmy. It's a mixed bag, right? I do, the whole story is fantastic, 30th pick, you know, and he worked so hard to get to the point, and he really did take monumental increases, like improvements, because I know you will recall this. Probably about 3 years in or 4 years in, there were still serious questions about Jimmy Butler offensively. Like, there was no way you could have predicted that he would be this good offensively. And he really did not become what I consider a great offensive player until Tibbs last year. And then he improved exponentially under Fred Hoiberg, which I always found kind of ironic considering his criticisms. Jimmy Butler offensively was even significantly better as an offensive player under Fred Hoiberg. But, you know, the things that do bother me is the, you know, nobody works harder than me. I think that's the worst thing you could say to a teammate, especially in an environment in publicly. You can say behind closed doors, hey, you guys aren't working hard enough. You get on my train. But how do you really know? Like, in my experience of playing basketball, the most talented and best basketball players weren't always the ones who worked the hardest. In fact, more often than not, I'd say the guys who were like 10th, 11th, 12th on the roster, those were the guys that really worked the hardest. They spent more time in the gym, you know, getting the most out of their limited talent. How does Jimmy Butler know if he works harder than Jerry and Grant? You know, just because he's better, he's more gifted, he's definitely a better athlete, but does he work harder than Jerry and Grant? I don't know. Does he know? He spent most of his off seasons in L.A. How does he know that? Just the worst thing you could potentially say about somebody, especially a teammate. So, you know, to that end, but then again, you know, you got to realize he never was like the greatest player on any one of his teams until he became a pro. It's so unique that I don't even know if that's ever happened, where you become a superstar as a pro instead of as a college or high school player. So, you know, he's still probably learning a little bit about the leadership process. But overall, most of what happened with Jimmy Butler was definitely positive. And I do wish him the best, but I agree with you too. Unless the money is too much to turn down, I don't think Jimmy Butler wants to spend the rest of his career in Minnesota. I think he wants to go to Los Angeles and play for the Clippers or Lakers. And after spending a week out there a couple weeks ago when it was like 75 all week or 80 degrees, I can completely understand why. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Right now it's working out for both teams, but I think in the long run we're all going to look back and just say, wow, what a deal for the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, I think so for sure. And you know what, Jimmy, if he stayed with the Bulls, was going to get that Supermax contract. And I like Jimmy, but I don't think I like Jimmy on a Supermax contract.
Amen.
You know, definitely a max player. But you know, whatever. I'm happy with what the Bulls got. I think it ended up being a really good deal for Chicago. If it also ends up being a good deal for the Wolves, then maybe it is, because they're going to make a playoff run this year. Maybe they'll make it to the second round. Maybe they can even make some noise after that. I think they're going to have some struggles because they just don't have enough defense, which is ironic given that you traded for Butler and you got Thibodeau there, you'd think that defense would be the staple of what's going on. But, you know, Karl Anthony Towns, and maybe it was just because we just watched, like, one of his worst games of the year or something, just really could not have been any less impressive in that Bulls game. It just made me feel like this really is your, you know, your star player. Like, I just didn't look at that team against the Bulls, and like I said, it was an off game for them. Maybe
it was.
I don't look at that team and say like, yep, they're ready to go. I don't see Towns as a future, you know, future surefire superstar. Another guy I kind of want to question a little bit. You know, for a while everyone has assumed like Anthony Davis is going to be this, you know, mega star and is going to lead his team, and I kind of feel like, you know, Davis really hasn't brought results with them. And maybe we were talking last week about Blake Griffin and how basically he came onto the scene as a rookie and was, like, absolutely amazing for a rookie. But then, like, his stats never really got a lot better. And I wonder to me if Anthony Davis is another one of those guys who just, like, he's not getting better, you know, enough. He's not able to figure out ways to get his teams to win. And maybe it's not even Davis. Maybe it's just the modern NBA. It's just too hard for a big man to impact the game in the same way that they did in the past. And maybe even for Markkanen, that's also going to put, you know, a ceiling on Markkanen as a guy who's maybe a second guy. We're in a very guard-dominant league right now, very guard-driven league right now. And so Lowry, even though he's pretty special, maybe he is really destined to be like a number two or three just because of the way the game is played, and some of these other big men who are just tremendous players are in the same boat. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, I couldn't disagree with you more on Towns. I think Towns is being completely misused in Minnesota. I think it's an embarrassment. I think he's one of the most talented big men I've ever seen. If you watch that Cleveland game, I don't think he missed a three-point shot. He's been kind of now relegated to a three-point shooter in this offense, and it's so ridiculous. Every time I watch a Minnesota game, I'm enraged with the way they're using him. So I think he is the most talented big man in the NBA, and I agree defensively. He's not always given it his all. But I think part of the reason is the insane amount of minutes Towns is playing. As a big man, he's never missed a game in the NBA. Extremely durable. Never missed one game. And yet, he played over one of two players who played over 3,000 minutes last year, and one of two players this year, up until a few games ago, who was over 2,000 minutes. The other one was Wiggins. For a center to be playing that amount of minutes is insane. And it's criminal. And what Tibbs is doing to this guy is a joke. And I'm so sick of people making excuses for Coach Thibodeau in the minutes. I understand if Wiggins is playing a lot of minutes. I understand if Butler is making a lot of minutes. I don't think it's right. I think it's dumb. I think that the way that the NBA is going is away from that. But to be playing a center that way is just completely wrong. So I disagree with you a lot on Towns. I think he's being completely misused. Davis is a little bit more complicated. I've never liked any player that has played with him in New Orleans. Holiday, I know a lot of people love Holiday. He's always hurt, and then when he's not hurt, yeah, he's an okay player, but is he really a top? I don't even think he's top 30. I think you can find 30 guys you'd rather have than Holiday. And then,
probably true.
You know how I feel about Boogie Cousins, and right now, who's the second best player on the team? Nico Mirotic? I mean, like, I don't think they've ever put a team around him that's remotely impressive. And I saw him in person against Golden State the year Golden State won their first title. And I was really blown away with how good he is fundamentally as a big man. Now, he's hurt a lot. There's a lot of issues with him. But I think if you put the right guys around him, Anthony Davis is clearly a top 10 player. I do agree. Even like last night, they won in double overtime against Brooklyn, right? Oh my God, wouldn't it have been great if they would have lost again? I do have to point out last week when I made the suggestion that Pelicans pick would be a potential lottery pick, I think you called me insane. And here we are a week later, and it was
a lottery pick. Already in the lottery.
But I just like to point that out. But you know, Edwin, he had 44 points in a double overtime game. Nico had a nice game too, but that team sucks around him. Like, you know what I mean? It's like he's never really had a guy who I'd say is, you know, besides Boogie Cousins, and I know there's going to be a lot of different opinion on him, but how about a guard? You know, how about a really great guard or three who's great defensively that does a lot of great things? Like, if you paired him up with Jimmy Butler, I think you'd see a much better Anthony Davis. But I do see your point. I mean, it's definitely a fair point that maybe there's a little bit more hype than there is substance, and you'd like to see a little bit more translation in the greatness, but I definitely disagree with you on Towns.
My thing with both those guys, maybe we should cut this one a little short, is just I would expect him, and this is maybe more true for Davis than Towns at this point, but like, I would expect he would have had at least one season where like they made it to like the first round and lost.
Yeah, and you know, like, got past the second round.
And like, for a while, the West was really tough. But like, at least win like 40 games.
Yeah.
Like, they've been like in like the 20s, you know, like, and I agree, he hasn't had great teammates, but like Ryan Anderson when he was playing well. I think they had Eric Gordon. You know, they had like some guys, not great guys, but like Jimmy Butler dragged the Bulls to like 42 wins a couple times, like with really no one else around him.
Yeah.
You know, like, you'd like to be able to see that. Like, if you're really impacting the game so much, I think you should be able to get your team more than like 20 something wins every year. You know, and maybe it is just criminally bad teammates. You know, I can't say I've really looked at New Orleans in depth like so much. Maybe it's just so bad. And we take for granted that the Bulls generally make pretty good pickups for their like depth. Like, you know, the Bulls usually don't have, when you go to like guys like 6, 7, 8, 9, just guys who are just complete train wrecks. Like, they really seem to do a pretty good job of talent analysis, and they
agreed,
pick up good guys. And maybe just Davis just doesn't have that. And maybe same with Towns, you know, like I said, I feel like he could do a lot more. I agree, he's great offensively. I just feel like he could do more defensively. And the minute thing, I agree, also an issue, but we'll see. I just wonder a little bit, though, if the game has moved away from these big men where, like, you know, they're great because they're shooting from outside and they have all these outside skills, but their outside skills are never as good as the great guards. You know, like, they're just not.
I agree, yeah.
And so if you're not going to play down low and the game is going away from playing down low and you can't get all these dominant post-up possessions, then those outside skills, they don't help you as much as if you have, like, a Steph Curry or a Klay Thompson from outside, or maybe even a Zach LaVine in a couple of years from outside. Like, it's just, you know, it's not as dangerous having Cousins or Davis or Towns shooting threes, in my opinion. It just isn't, unless you become just, you know, just as great a shooter, and those guys generally don't become as good of shooters, and then also they generally can't get their shot as easily off the dribble. Like, usually those guys aren't just, like, putting the ball on the floor a lot, or else they kind of get it, like, knocked away a little bit more than, you know, some of the guards, just closer to the ground, honestly.
It's just, yeah,
like the ball is connected to their hand, like, a much longer period of time than it is for, like, these big men when they're trying to dribble.
I do want to counter one thing, because you touched on something that really riles me a little bit.
Oh, boy.
Well, just for 3 minutes, let's get on this topic, because I do want to say it, because I don't know how many times I read it on the tweet. The Bulls front office, they failed in surrounding Jimmy with players that matter, with doing a great job. All right. Jimmy Butler, when he became a real true superstar in the first year under Fred Hoiberg, he still had Paul Gasol, who is probably the second best player that Kawhi Leonard has around him. He still had Gasol. He still had Taj Gibson. He still had Noah, obviously, who got hurt. And the Bulls transformed in Rose, who obviously was fading. But they turned Rose into Lopez, who is a very solid player by any measure. He was with Jimmy. And Taj Gibson was still with Jimmy when he started last year. And they added Rondo and they added Wade. Regardless what you say about those guys, Jimmy wanted Wade. And if you close your eyes and you realize that Wade put up 18 points in 30 minutes per game, if his name wasn't Dwayne Wade, everybody would be talking. If his name was Kirk Heinrich, there'd be statues for Kirk Heinrich for putting up 18 points in 30 minutes per game. Like, I understand. And Nico Mirotic, who obviously didn't play as well with Jimmy, but he has talent. Is that on Jimmy a little bit, that he didn't get the best out of Nico? I'm just acting like I'm so sick of the narrative that he had nothing when he was here. The cupboard was bare. Nah, it wasn't nothing. You know, Taj Gibson's pretty good. And Nico Mirotic isn't terrible. And, you know, Lopez is a solid player. And Rondo was actually pretty good. And things actually worked out. Like, they were actually up 2-0 in the playoffs. And then, you know, Rondo got hurt. And the rest is history. But to act like it was, like, some complete and utter disaster, the Bulls had to get out of Rose's contract. They had to get out of Noah. You know, it wasn't like, you know, that they failed miserably. I don't think what's surrounding my point is, I don't think what's surrounding Jimmy in Chicago was like a million times worse than what's surrounding Kawhi Leonard, or like worse than what's surrounding Davis. You know, it's like, come on. It wasn't that bad. And yeah, they chose not to build around him because he's 28. He's got tons of miles on him due to the previous coach, and they don't want to pay him, you know, $50 million when he's 36 years old. So I think it worked out. But do you concur or agree that, oh, this team that surrounded Jimmy Butler was just a travesty?
Well, I don't think it was a tragedy, and I don't really think many people thought it was a tragedy. They wanted it to be better, clearly, but it was enough talent to do what he did. I mean, when I saw those teams the past couple of years that won around 40 games before the season started, each time I said, "This looks like a team that's going to win around 40 games," and it's like what we got. I was not at all surprised with the results. I thought, if anything, maybe they were like a game or two ahead of what I predicted they would be, but like, it was pretty much right on par with what I thought the talent level of the team was. It was like a bunch of, you know, decent to okay components with one star, and you're hoping that maybe one of those components would break out. And, you know, I think of all those signings that they made, you know, really the only one that just screwed them was the Wade signing. You know, I think if you could go and take that one back, I mean, there really wasn't anyone else to sign, which is the problem. They didn't have, you know, a lot of options on the table. But I think if you could take that signing back, you probably would.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know what else you'd do, but you'd do something else with it.
But I'd counter, and this is, goes right into the tweets that you had with Stefan Noe, and I love Stefan. He's a fantastic writer, and he's one of the best that cover the Bulls. But I disagree with him on this point where he brought up, you know, the Wade was just being horrific. Like, out of the signings in 2016, I have a general rule in life. I never get upset over a 1 or 2 year contract. If it's a 4 year contract that's taking up considerable amount of your cap space, and that guy sucks and he's Mahimi or Parsons or some bum like that or Dang or Noah, then you lose sleep. But was really Wade's contract in the top 20 bad contracts signed that year? I don't think it's even close.
You paid him $50 million to basically play 1 year of.
But you didn't pay him $50 million.
Average basketball, probably. Maybe around average basketball.
Yeah,
it wasn't a great deal, that's for sure. But it didn't hamper you long term.
Right.
Like, if you look at the value you got for that $50 million, it was really, really bad. But if you think, like, well, it only limited our cap space, there wasn't, like, great alternatives. Like, at some point, you also realize they have to spend, like, a certain amount of money no matter what, right? Like, you're going to be below the salary cap floor. There's only so many things you can do, and so it's, you know, I agree. It didn't have any impact on the franchise.
Yeah, so let's get into a little bit about Steph's article, and I saw your back and forth with me on Twitter, and I encourage people to go check it out. You know, the basic point of Steph's article, well, take one step back. I think the Nico trade, when all is said and done, people are going to look back in amazement that the Bulls were able to garner a first-round pick, probably a lottery pick, for Nico Mirotić, a guy who's never made an all-star team, never really came close, never will. It will blow people's minds in this environment where people are looking differently at first-round picks and very reluctant to trade them, that the Bulls were able to garner a first-round potential lottery pick for Nico Mirotić is amazing. So that said, you know, just because it happened a week early and not at the trade deadline, the Bulls, of course, you know, it's just a reflexive action from everyone out there to rip on the front office. And, of course, they're getting heat for not making more deals. And I don't agree with just trading Lopez for a second-round pick. I think second-round picks are almost worthless, primarily worthless, especially if you're in the second half of the draft, second half of the second round. So I don't care about second-round picks. I don't care if we trade them all day. I think any exhaustive study of second-round picks shows that. That said, you got into a point with him, like, Steph's, the basic point of his article was they didn't make any deals, they didn't take on salary, they should have got at least a second-rounder, you know, so just basically a criticism for their inaction at the trade deadline. And your response was, if you could go into a little bit about what you felt about the article and what you felt was wrong about the article.
Yeah, all I was really saying is, like, he was saying the Bulls are cheap. That was the main point. The Bulls are cheap. And as I pointed out on Twitter, I've written the treatise on how the Bulls are cheap. So I know it. I mean, I agree with it that they're generally a franchise that has a high component of profitability built into how they operate. But it's like you're just taking that opinion you have and then you're just applying it to every situation, trying to see how that situation could be crafted to fit this opinion. And I think that's where I disagree. Like, there's no evidence at the deadline that the Bulls were cheap at all. There were no other salary dumps made. You know, all the reports were no one wants to give up a first-round pick. And so what, the Bulls didn't take on salary to get a second-rounder or something? I mean, we don't even know if that was on the table. But even if it was, like, that cap space might be more valuable in the offseason than it would be now, either using it to pick up a player or using it to take on salary as one of the few teams who will be able to do that, like, at draft time. You know, if someone needs to get below the taxes, you know, you still have other times where you can maybe use this flexibility that can help you. And if there's nothing good on the table, I don't see why you would do that right now. And there clearly wasn't. Like, there clearly wasn't. There are other teams that could have taken on salary, and no one did it. So basically, no GM who had the ability to take on salary thought that there was a worthwhile trade out there to do so. But we're going to rip on the Bulls for it. And I think at this deadline, when you look back in a couple of years, you're going to go, the Chicago Bulls got a better pick for Nikola Mirotic than the Clippers did for Blake Griffin. Like, think about that.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, that's what you're going to say. I mean, the Bulls probably made the best deal of any team at the trade deadline. So, like, I just don't know how you can complain about that. Like, I really don't. And, yes, if you had found some other deal to take on salary, and, you know, then it would have been great if they did it. If some other team had taken on a bunch of salary and got, like, a, you know, pick number 20 or something out of it, I'd have been like, yes, the Bulls should have been in on that. Completely. They were cheap. They should have been in on that. But that didn't happen. It didn't happen. Like, no one took on salary. So it's just a silly thing to argue about. I think it was a very successful trade deadline. I'll disagree with you a little bit on Lopez. If we could have dumped Lopez for an expiring in the second rounder, I'd have taken it. Not because Lopez is, you know, not worth that much. He's clearly a good enough player to be worth that much. But because if you move Robin Lopez off this team, then I think our pick moves up 3 to 4 spots. I think Robin Lopez, the rest of the season, will have that impact that wins. That if he was just gone and we had to play Felicio for like 30 minutes a night, that the Bulls are probably going to lose at least like 3 more games than they will end up losing. And that probably moves our pickup from, say, you know, I think right now we're probably going to be in that 7-8 range, and it probably would move us up, you know, into the 4 or 5 range. And I think, you know, Lopez is not worth moving up from, or is worth moving up 8 to 4, or 8 to 5. Like, I'd rather not have Lopez and move up 4 or 5 spots.
Yeah, so here's the basic reason why I differ on that. And it all comes down to this. There's a general attitude, all these Sane Hickey disciples out there kind of feel like you got to suck and be a lottery team for like 3 or 4 or 5 years. The entire reason we traded Jimmy Butler was so we don't have to endure that type of nonsense that Philadelphia put their fans through for 5 stinking years. And they're still a barely 500 team. Like, yeah, I understand if we only had one pick, yeah, then you suck for 3 straight years. We got 3 assets, all young, all 22 and under, for Jimmy Butler. We shouldn't be sucking for 3 years. In fact, this offseason, after this draft pick, I'm going for the playoffs next year. It does me no good to suck and get another lottery pick. It does the Bulls no good when you have the core of what should be a championship contender already here. You need those guys to get playoff experience. You need them to be the 8th seed and see what it's like to get their rear end handed to them. People don't talk about it, but the Bulls made the playoffs in 2009 before they went to the Eastern Conference Final, and they got swept by Cleveland, or I think they might have won 1 game. I can't recall off the top of my head. When Vinny Del Negro was a coach, that experience was good for Derrick Rose and Dang and everyone, and Taj Gibson and Noah and everyone on that team. So I'm not sending away, you know, Lopez for a second round pick when I feel that this team should be a playoff team as early as next season. So that's my point. That's all I'm just trying to argue, is that I'm not in this for another stinking lottery pick next year. I don't want another lottery pick next year. And it does you no good with changing the whole, you know, to tank is not as, does not guarantee you. It won't guarantee you going forward with the changes in the lottery rules. So that's my only point I made there. And do you disagree with me that this Bulls team could be a playoff team next year?
I think they will be a playoff team next year. But I think this is trading Lopez is about getting a pick this year, not next year. Do you see Lopez being a long-term part of your future? He's not that old. You could re-sign him know, for a few more years after this year. But I don't see Lopez as being a long-term part of the future. And if, you know, moving up 3 or 4 spots gets me better odds and I get Ayton out of it, like, it's clearly worth it.
Yeah.
Clearly worth it. Like, this is the last chance. So to me, I agree with your assessment. But I think the result, though, of that assessment to me is that's why you trade Lopez. Because this is your last chance to get that pick. So you want that pick to be as good as possible. You know, you want to be going into next year with, like, pick number 12 and pick number 4. You know, or, you know, if you win, maybe pick number 1, 2, or 3, which you could still do out of any slot, obviously. But you want to go into next year with those two kind of like good assets coming in, plus the three guys you got, plus Portis and Valentine, you know, who look like they're, you know, very serviceable young players, and then, you know, got like $20 million in cap room, and then see what you can build.
Yeah.
So I think that is, that then becomes what you have. And Lopez, I think, you know, he would help. He would help for sure next year. He'll help you get in the playoffs. But I think, you know, the value, the long-term value of getting a higher selection, you know, may or may not, it you know, obviously depends what happens. You know, look at Lowry, right? He looks like, what, was maybe the best player in this draft?
Second best player.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know where you put him at this point, but he was pick number seven. So if the Bulls end up with pick number seven next year, you could still end up with the best player, right? I mean, you know, Stephen Curry wasn't pick number one. You know, so it doesn't guarantee you anything being higher. But with how well the Bulls have generally drafted, I would certainly feel like really confident if they got a high pick that they're going to pick the right guy. And, you know, maybe the best guy gets pick number five. And if you were number five, you would have had him, but now you can't.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting discussion, though, about where that delineation is for trading a player. Let's just assume that we're not factoring in, like, you know, Lopez is making the team better, and obviously it's going to affect their draft status. I always say that can be controlled through minutes, right? You pull the Lakers Suns, what they did at the end of last year, and you've taken care of that. But moving like a Holiday, for example, who I think will be very valuable next year as a backup, two or three coming off the bench. I think he's a perfect guy to come off the bench in our effort to, whoever we draft who's going to play the three, hopefully Miles Bridges, he'll be a backup to him and come in and occasionally start if there's an injury. You know, what's the dividing line? Like, for, hey, we could have got a second-round pick for Holiday. I don't think you'd do that.
So for me, it's all about, if management just said, we're not playing Lopez and Holiday right now, then I'd agree. Don't keep them both. Because they'll be available next year. And I agree, you could just go and play that with minutes. I think the NBA is kind of cracking down on some of that stuff a little bit. Like, they don't want teams, like, obviously just, you know, not playing guys. Like, they're trying to avoid that. That's why they changed the whole draft rules and everything else going into next year. But I agree. It seemed like the Bulls were going to do that, right? I mean, you saw the Bulls press conference, I assume. John Paxson goes out and he says at the trade deadline, he's like, look, Robin and Justin are veterans. They know the direction we're going as a team. You know, they understand we're going to have to look at some young guys. And, you know, really heavily implying, like, hey, we are going to cut these guys' minutes a lot. But then, you know, you go into these last two games, it didn't happen. You know, Felicio hasn't played at all, I don't think, in the last couple of games. And, you know, really runs contrary to what Paxson had just said at the press conference a few days ago. And, you know, if they had played Felicio for 10 minutes, they lose that Timberwolves game.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's, you know, even though it was a fun win and you enjoy the wins right now, look, I'm purely on the, you got to get losses at this point. Like, these wins aren't helping you. I agree, next year, you got to get to the playoffs, you got to get these guys, the culture of winning and all that jazz. But this year is, like, really a weird transition year, right? Like, I mean, Levine's coming back from his ACL, Dunn's been in and out of the lineup, Lowry's just a rookie trying to get his feet underneath him. Like, it's okay, you're not going to break these guys by having a bad year this year. But next year, when you have all your pieces in place and there's some continuity and everyone is healthy and goes through camp together and all that kind of stuff, I think you're going to be able to really build something. And so I'd be happy if the Bulls did not win another game this season.
Yeah, no, agreed. I am 100% in agreement with you on that. I want them to beat the Timberwolves, and that's the last game I'm really serious about them winning. I hope they lose every game from here on out. It's going to be best for us. And you still want to see him. It's up to Fred to control that. He can control it. Just give tons of minutes to Zipser and tons of minutes to Felicio, and what we hope will happen will happen.
But so far it's not happened. Yeah, and head coaches, I don't think, you know, there has to be a direct order from Paxson. And it sounded like there was one, right? Like, it sounded publicly, like he even stated, this is what we're going to do, and it didn't happen. There's got to be a direct order from Paxson to Hoiberg saying, look, we're not trying to win games here. You know, we want to see you do your best, blah, 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 blah. But in the end, you know, realistically, we want this draft pick.
No, but I think it's happened, Doug.
This is what we're doing.
I think it's happened.
You have to have that conversation. Hoiberg knows what's going on. He's been a general manager. It's not like he's blind to the calculus here.
Well, there's been, I think during the 7-game winning streak, there's been times where Zipser and Felicio are playing, and I'm like, what are these guys doing on the court? And I really think it's because of management telling Fred, you're going to play them, I don't care, no matter what. And they better hit this minute amount, or else you're in trouble. And I think that's happened. I really do.
I don't think it has, because it's not been consistent. You've only seen guys play a couple minutes here or there. Like, you should see Felicio telling, like, look, Zipser and Felicio, 15 minutes every night.
Yeah.
Minimum. No matter what. If they're playing bad, double it. Just kidding, all right? Yeah. I don't know what they're going to really do, but you have to have that conversation, and probably Vonleh as well when he's like over here. Like, he's another guy who maybe you need to get some minutes to, just to disrupt, like, anything good anyone else has going on. You know, you just gotta get these guys out there, and you have to look at it that way. And, you know, I don't know that the Bulls are aggressive enough in how they view getting to losses. And maybe, like, their value on the chart is different than yours. And like, I'm like, oh, it'd be so great if we moved up 3-4 picks. You know, and the Bulls might be thinking, like, you know what, there's, like, 9 guys we really like. You know, I mean, who knows? I don't know. You know, they may value, like, just having the guys really try hard, and they want to see some wins because it shows progression. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I think we kind of feel like you would want all your young players to play well and show growth, and then you want to play your garbage players enough that you secure a loss. You know, like, the ideal game is that, like, Dunn, Lowry, and Levine each have great games every night, and then the team loses because the rest of the team is just, you know, crumbling.
Right. Well, as we pull the big red bus into the driveway, I do want to make one final prediction. You know, so all these people that were out there criticizing management for not taking on more money are going to look pretty foolish in the future, because I do feel like all those 2016 contracts that people wanted to bring in for, you know, even a late first rounder, let's say, and there's tons of them, Noah, Dang, Crabbe, Solomon Hill, Evan Turner, Miles Plumlee, Biombo, Batum, Mahimi, Parsons, I could go on and on. But I know there were guys that wanted to bring one of those in. I think we're going to get, in the next 2 years, either 2018 or 2019, probably more likely 2019, a free agent, and we're all going to look, I can't believe we got that guy for that amount of money. Because the $8 million that Lou Williams signed for, with how good he's played this year at only 31 years of age, is insanity compared to some of those contracts that were signed before. And I don't know if it's, you know, Avery Bradley, just throwing his name out there, Avery Bradley for $5 million. There's going to come a time where we're going to get a player of that ilk for a very low amount of money in the next 2 years, and we're all going to be glad we didn't take on one of those albatrosses that are screwing up other franchises. So that's my prediction today. Remember what I say. I'm going to record this, and when we make that signing in 18 or 19, I'm going to replay it. And I'm going to drag everyone else out.
Because after we re-sign Levine, I don't think we're going to have money in 2019.
Oh, maybe you're right.
So I think it's going to have to be this year. So
Well, 2019.
We'll see, but I do think there's a good chance that'll happen. I agree that things to do with the money than there was at the deadline.
Can I just ask you this really quick before we jump off the big red bus? So 2019, let's say Levine, we signed Levine, right? Obviously, too, at $20 million, between 15 and $20 million a year, whatever he ends up making. Are we? Isn't that still a good cap situation for us? Or is there something I'm missing that 2019?
I think it depends on the other guys, right? I think who is a RFA in 2019? I think Portis is up that year, and you know, maybe whether you keep him or not. And, you know, if you bring in any guys this year besides Levine, which it seems likely, like, you might bring in some other role player this year. I can't say I've looked at the math that closely for 2019. I just kind of broke down the 2018. But it struck me off the cuff that if Levine signs a big deal, that your 2019 space is going to be pretty limited. You'll have some. I think you could still potentially be under the cap and do better under the cap than using the exceptions. But I think you'd have, like, you know, like $15 million, maybe not enough for like a max guy or something like that.
No, we'll see, because I think Osick, you got to remember, comes off by then, right? You got a very low buyout number for that year. We'll check it out. For the next big red bus, let's look at the 2019 cap situation. So that'll be a holdover. So eager for everyone to listen to the next episode as we break down 2019, because I got to win it in 2020. So, all right, my man. Doug, awesome talking to you, brother. You always bring the goods, as usual, as we...
I don't know. We're going to exit the tank, though.
My, as we climb out of the top of the new revised bus made into a big red tank, I will bid you all adieu. Have a great week. Have a good one, my man. Thanks for jumping on the big red bus.
Thanks, Fred.